Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This podcast is presented by David Lowen Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM. From the Ed Morse Sawgrass Cadillac Studios, Morse has more. Visit EdMorseSawgrass.com. This is the Alex Dono Show on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM, 96.5 FM HD2, and online at WQAM.com.
Yes!
Oh, it is.
It is.
The Alex Dono Show here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM. Streaming on the internet, WQAM.com, or on your smartphone, TuneIn Radio app, radio.com app, however you listen. We appreciate your patronage. I'm making up words. God, it's only 6:04. I already can't speak. If you'd like to get in tonight, share your infinite wisdom with us via the phone lines, 305-567-0560, 954-567-0560, or you can always get at us on the plumbers911.com text line at 56022, but please don't text and drive. So now it's Thursday. Is it starting to feel like a return back to normalcy? You know, and I don't want to speak for anybody because, you know, I know that there are some out there who perhaps still don't have electricity and maybe the cleanup in your front and backyards continues. So I can't speak for everyone, but those who I have spoken to today, I think we're starting to reach this mode around town where we can start and focus more on the regular routine in life, rather than still kind of recapping and you know, cleaning things up after Hurricane Irma. Maybe I'm wrong, but I start to feel like today is a day where I feel comfortable on this radio station. I'll be with you guys for about the next 4 hours here where, hey, we can focus primarily on where the Miami Hurricanes sit right now, and they don't play a game for another week and a half. Remember, no game this weekend. How weird is it that this would have been Florida State week, right? I mean, you think about, if not for our lives being put on pause for a few days by Hurricane Irma and the cancellations and the postponements for various football games, if Hurricane Irma had never graced our shores here in the state of Florida, we would be preparing for Florida State this weekend. Instead, no Canes game this weekend. The next time they play will be at home September 23rd against Toledo. And it was announced today that they're going to be practicing next week in Orlando. They're going to be in Disney World, but it's a business trip, not a pleasure trip. A business trip in Orlando. They'll be at the Wide World of Sports Complex, the ESPN Wide World of Sports Complex in Disney, because it's strange. And when we talk next hour, we'll talk to Christy Chirinos from the South Florida Sun Sentinel. She covers the Miami Hurricanes. Yeah, I'd like to know if she's got like any idea what the campus looks like right now, because I don't live too far from there, but I haven't had a chance to go by and check out Coral Gables and the UM campus, because I know that they aren't resuming classes there until September 25th. And they are still assessing the damage there. They're still assessing kind of where everything is and when the power grid is going to be back up, because a lot of the dorms, even as of today, still did not have power there at the University of Miami. So with all that still going on, the team has decided and the athletic department has decided to make a proactive decision rather than waiting a couple more days to see where they stand. They're going to be taking the team to Orlando. They're going to practice in Orlando next week before returning to South Florida and Hard Rock Stadium next Saturday to host Toledo September 23rd. So the team is going to be displaced. And, you know, I just want to send out this disclaimer because I know we've got a handful of listeners, at least a handful in the Orlando area, Hurricanes fans in the Orlando area. Unfortunately, you cannot watch practice. Like, it's not going to be, and the same thing down here. So this is nothing unusual, but the practices in Orlando will not be open to the public the same way the practices in Coral Gables are not open to the public. But I've already had a couple people from the Orlando area ask me on Twitter, oh, does this mean I can go out and watch practice? No, it does not mean you can go out and watch practice. So unfortunately, you will, well, fortunately, at least, you will have people like Christy Chirinos, who we talked to tonight, Matt Porter, he's a friend of the show, Peter Ariz, a big friend of the show. Those who will be covering those practices in Orlando, you will have to rely on them because they will be your eyes and ears out there, up there at the Wide World of Sports Complex, gathering some of that information. So we can focus more on football and we can focus on the NFL. Miami Dolphins this week, finally making that long-awaited regular season debut in not San Diego, but Los Angeles, taking on the Chargers. The Chargers being in LA now, it's one of the most awkward situations I can recall in the National Football League. You know, I know that teams move every now and then. Sometimes the move goes very smoothly. Either way, I thought that the Rams moving from St. Louis to LA went pretty smoothly last year. You know, the first preseason game that they hosted there was sold out with 90,000 fans. It seemed like Los Angeles embraced the Rams. And remember, there was already a built-in fan base because the Rams played in Los Angeles previously up until, what was it, the early 1990s. So it kind of fit like a glove to send that team back there. And now the Chargers are in Los Angeles. And, okay, so the existing Chargers fans in San Diego, 2.5-3 hours away, they hate the team now. They're so bitter. And they hate the city of Los Angeles. They despise them. They're not driving 2.5-3 hours to catch a game there. The fans who are in Los Angeles have no history to that team. And they just got another team last year, so their heads are spinning. So there's no support locally. The Chargers play in, and you remember last year in San Diego when the Dolphins played the Chargers at Qualcomm, they couldn't sell out that building, and it was half empty because the fans in San Diego were already bitter about knowing the team was about to move, so they didn't show up last year. Now, this year that they're in Los Angeles, they play in the StubHub Center. They share a stadium. Up until that new complex in Inglewood is going to be built in 2020 is when that new stadium that will share the Rams and the Chargers, up until that stadium opens, the L.A. Chargers are playing in a 27,000-seat soccer stadium that they share with the LA Galaxy. So you would think an NFL team playing in a 27,000-seat stadium, you would think, oh, the tickets sell out within seconds of going on sale. You would think that, right? No, you'd be wrong. Ton of tickets available. They're very concerned there in Los Angeles. They're very concerned in the NHL, in the NFL league offices that they're going to have terrible attendance this year, despite only playing in a 27,000-seat stadium. If that's not embarrassing, I don't know what is. And here's the thing that ticks me off a little bit, because you see this now. This has become a big narrative in the NFL. And I know a lot of us are really still, week two starts tonight, yet we're still catching up on week one, right? Because we didn't have electricity Sunday, Monday. We missed a lot of football over the weekend. We're still getting caught up on week one, even though week two starts in about 2.5 hours. One of the big storylines coming out of week one in the National Football League was, the attendance is plummeting. Yet a couple games specifically, if you've seen the footage, if you've seen the pictures, very noticeable embarrassing crowds or lack of crowds at the Los Angeles Rams opener, you know, where they shellacked Indianapolis. But if a tree falls in the woods, there's no one there to hear it. Does it actually make a sound? That stadium was empty. And I know it's tough to fill up the Coliseum, 90,000 seats, but that was embarrassing. Levi Stadium in the San Francisco area was half empty for the 49ers home opener. And now apparently the league is panicking. Also, Thursday night, New England Patriots fans, when their team was getting shellacked by the Kansas City Chiefs, they left early. So how come there are no apologies being sent out to the city of Miami and South Florida sports fans? Because how often do we get singled out? Anytime you see people leaving early, oh, if you left that Game 6, Heat San Antonio Spurs, you got locked out of the building. Oh, this is a national embarrassment. Miami doesn't deserve pro teams. These fans are terrible. They don't show up. They don't care. Yeah, how come people aren't criticizing Los Angeles, San Francisco, New England the way that they should after events like that? How come Miami gets singled out? I'm still waiting on my apology to all those empty seat blogs. I'm still waiting on my apology when you call us terrible fans. And I'm not saying that we don't leave early to beat the traffic when you're getting shellacked or when you are putting a whooping on the other team. I'm not saying we don't show up late, because we do, right? We are guilty of many of those things. There's no question about it. But what I'm saying is, why does the South Florida fan always get singled out as the only fans who leave early, show up late, or don't show up at all when these things happen all around the country? Not everybody is New York, Boston, Chicago. Not every market is as diehard, right? Not every college market is Ann Arbor, Michigan, Columbus, Ohio. Not every market around the country embraces their teams and lives and dies with their teams the way that those handful of markets do. Yet why do we get singled out? Texter writes in, people hate Miami. Well, no question about that. They hate what they cannot have. Jealousy is probably a better word to describe it. But it's become an issue. Like, the NFL is now getting worried. And you know what? The Miami Dolphins don't have attendance problems like that. So, yeah, this is the city that you rip because not enough Hurricane fans show up to Hard Rock Stadium. And you're concerned about the lower bowl at the American Airlines Arena being half empty for the first quarter because people are stuck in traffic. Or you know what? Even more than the traffic, if you've ever been to the American Airlines Arena for a Heat game, you wait in a concession line. You get in a concession line. Like, you want to get a taco or some ice cream 10 minutes before the game starts. You don't get out of that line until end of the first quarter. It's maddening, right? But they criticize us for that. Yet, you don't see any of these other cities singled out when things like that happen. But the NFL is worried about it. They are. I mean, I know that the factors for league attendance, the things that you're fighting, right, with league attendance, what they're fighting for to try and keep the numbers up to capacity in every stadium. We've reached a point where, and I'm not reinventing the wheel when I say this, because a lot of us have known this for the last couple of years, the stadium experience is now having such a hard time competing with the home experience, right? When there are people out there who have 75-inch LED screens and 4K screens, when you've got the tailgating supplies, you bring them home instead of bringing them to the game, it's becoming much harder and harder for NFL stadiums around the country to compete with that. And when you've got teams that are terrible, or you've got a team like the Los Angeles Chargers that nobody in Los Angeles cares about, and the people who still live in San Diego are too bitter to drive up to a game, you're not going to be selling out. That is the new normal now in the NFL, where teams have to win to keep people in. And I know that's the case in Los Angeles. And this is one of the reasons why I get so upset when people single out South Florida for having terrible fans. The fans in LA have the same attitude. A lot of transplants over there, the way we have a lot of transplants here. And people in Los Angeles, very expensive to live out there. In fact, much more expensive to live in LA than it is to live in Miami. People make financial choices over there. They make choices before spending their entertainment dollars. And if their teams are not winning, they do not pay to support them. The same way a lot of people in South Florida do not pay to support their teams when their teams aren't winning. People make those kind of business decisions over there in LA. LA is notorious for that, yet they don't seem to be singled out as much as people in Miami do. And I did think it was interesting today talking about the StubHub Center in LA. And Ndamukong Suh today after Dolphins practice. Dolphins have been over in Southern California, in Oxnard. That's where they're preparing for their matchup. They went over there on Friday before Hurricane Irma. They've been kind of having a second training camp out there after having week one canceled. And Ndamukong Suh said, you know, playing out there in that stadium, it's going to be like playing in a high school game. I mean, it's true what he said. No denying that, but it's a little bit of a backhanded slap. It's a little bit of it's throwing a little bit of shade at the LA Chargers situation that, yeah, we have to approach that crowd and that atmosphere. It's going to feel like playing in a high school game. And Sue even compared it to, yeah, I think when he first arrived with the Dolphins a couple of years ago, they held like a practice or a scrimmage at Ricardo Silva Stadium, FIU's football stadium, which holds 23,500 people. So he like compared it to that. It playing at a stadium like that, it's what it's going to be like. And Jay Cutler, for the record today, said that, I think he said this yesterday, actually, that without question, this is the weirdest season opening scenario that he has ever been a part of in the NFL. I mean, it's a very strange. And, you know, I guess I know there have been columns written. I think Armando Salguero wrote a good column this week about how, you know, this really sets the table for the Dolphins to overcome some adversity, right? If they can put together a storybook playoff season, despite all of the preseason injuries, despite 16 consecutive weeks of playing football, no true bye week now, you know, you lost your starting quarterback, a starting linebacker, a very good defensive back in the preseason. You were displaced. You've got to play 16 games in a row. You've got to essentially, you know, camp out for 10 days in Southern California before your first game. You don't play a true home game until the 8th of October. You lose a home game to Dopey London. You've got to play their week 4 against the Saints. So the Dolphins really now have the opportunity for a storybook situation if they can put together an impressive start to the year. And Jay Cutler did say that it's bar none the weirdest season opening scenario he has endured in his entire life, right? And I caught Brian Billick today on the Joe Rose Show. I thought that he made a lot of sense in saying that, you know what, obviously there are negatives, right? When you're going to go now 2.5 weeks without playing a game, I think 24 days is how long Jay Cutler will go between snaps in a game, between the third preseason game and the first regular season game, 24 games for Jay Cutler without taking a snap in a game situation. Of course, you worry about rust, right? Coaches will be concerned about that. You know, coaches are, I'm sure they're approaching practices this week in a way where they're trying to minimize the amount of rust that they experience this Sunday. But there's also positives in it. There's also a positive when you think of building this team unity, right? For guys to have to stay in a hotel to essentially have a 10-day training camp, an extra training camp before they play this game, that could do some things for the chemistry. But two factors are way bigger than that. Number one being that, yeah, okay, Dolphins haven't played a game in a long time, but they are also one of the two most rested teams in the NFL. Dolphins and Tampa Bay Buccaneers, healthiest, most rested teams in the National Football League right now. So that's a positive. They don't come out of week one banged up the way that, you know, the LA Chargers did playing a Monday night game to open up their season. They only have six days between games at this point. And then the other thing was, we talked about this a little bit last night, because Anthony Lynn, the Chargers coach, brought this up in a conference call yesterday. They don't really have any relevant film on this year's version of the Dolphins, right? Because how much can you buy into preseason? When you break down Jay Cutler taking, 15 snaps in the third preseason game, what's that really going to tell you about Jay Cutler in a Dolphins uniform? You've got nothing to go on there. Nothing. They may have to dig up 2015 game film from Jay Cutler when he played under Adam Gase 2 years ago. That may be something that the Chargers have to study before Sunday's matchup, because they, you know, the Dolphins were not running a lot of creative plays in the third preseason game, even though they did show their first team offense for the better part of the first half. So you really don't have a lot of material for the LA Chargers to focus on before this matchup. We're going to talk some Heat on the other side. Josh Richardson, he agreed to an extension with the Miami Heat yesterday, 4 years, $42 million. You know, we'll get the scoop from Ira Winderman. Why now to pay Richardson and what this means, what message the Heat organization is setting here. But before we get to Ira, I want to talk about the Quarterdeck Seafood Bar and Neighborhood Grill. The folks at the Quarterdeck, they have been working for the last few days tirelessly to get their restaurants open, and the restaurants are back open. I think it's so important, to be able to go to some of your favorite spots, your favorite sports bars, your favorite eateries, because that's really one of the signs that you take that, okay, life is getting back to normal, right? If you're a big fan of the Quarterdeck Seafood Bar and Neighborhood Grill, being able to go back to those restaurants today, I think, is a very important step to really finishing out your week the right way. The Quarterdeck Seafood Bar and Neighborhood Grill, great place for Thursday night football tonight, great place for all the games this coming weekend. Why is it such a great place? Well, first of all, they've got high-def flat-screen TVs covering every wall, so you're not going to miss a second of the game. They got great drink specials. The Spirit Master is concocting these craft cocktails, always coming up with new ideas. They got 2-for-1 happy hour all day, every day at the Quarterdeck. The drink specials never end. The food is delicious. Whether it's the seafood, I'm a huge fan of the seafood at the Quarterdeck. It's always fresh. Oysters, Maine lobster, world-class sushi, great mahi. The mahi sandwich is awesome there. I love the shrimp at the Quarterdeck, whether it's the buffalo shrimp. The shrimp burrito is very good. If you're not a seafood fan, they've got options, believe me. The chicken wings are amazing. The chicken ciabatta sandwich. The meat falls off the bone. Baby back ribs are so tender. Build your own burger with tons of fresh toppings. But whatever you do, when you're at the Quarterdeck, you want to save room for dessert, because the key lime cheesecake, that is the perfect way to finish every meal. If you want to find your location, Quarterdeck Seafood Bar and Neighborhood Grill, you want to visit them on the web at quarterdeckrestaurants.com. That's quarterdeckrestaurants.com, where you come for the food and stay for the fun. Back here on the Alex Dono Show, we go out now to the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Toyota of Hollywood has moved 2 blocks south of their old location. Get there now Ira Winderman from the South Florida Sun Sentinel joins us. Ira, it's been a while. I think early last week was the last time I spoke to you. I hope you and the family are well and that you made it through the storm okay. How are you?
A little bit of no power. Got through it fine. Safe and sound. Had my mother over here. Shutters up, shutters down. Coconuts on the ground. Still a special. $5 for $1. Come on over. Pick them up off the lawn, please. All good, except like you were just talking about in your last segment. It's as if last week in sports never happened.
Yeah.
It's as if maybe tonight is the first game of the NFL season. It's just crazy how you lose track of sports. You have so many other priorities. Like you mentioned, it's crazy to think this was going to be Florida State-Miami Armageddon weekend for one team in the ACC. That sort of put on hold. It feels like college football has been put on hold. It really is crazy how life does get in the way sometimes.
Yeah, and Ira, as I mentioned, I've been catching up on everything in the NFL the last couple of days, and one of the big storylines has been bad ticket sales, attendance in the National Football League plummeting. The league is concerned about it. I mean, do you think now, Ira, people can start to agree that this is not just a Miami problem because we get singled out for all this?
Oh, no, I think this is a change-of-the-game problem. I think this is – there's so many factors here that the NFL never addresses, whether it's Colin Kaepernick's comments or how he was treated, number one. Mm. You have different people on both sides of that. The whole CTE discussions and people like Ed Cunningham no longer broadcasting the game because they realize the inherent dangers that maybe you don't want to be part of this, or people on the opposite side of that. The fact is that there's so many other sports options right now that basically everything sports-wise is taking somewhat of a dip because now there's so many other directions to turn to as well. So I think it's a whole bunch of reasons. I think the NFL always thought it was beyond reproach and above it all. And then you see the Monday Night Football ratings versus the ratings for the opening weekend last year are down about 10% or so, the numbers, the overnights that came out that I saw initially. So, yeah, I think it's a little bit of a change. I think the NFL has so many issues and such an unpopular commissioner that it almost reminds me back. I know Major League Baseball sort of has revisionist history, but the Goodell era is starting to get really close to the Bud Selig era. Or era, if you want to even put it that way. And it just makes me wonder that sometimes, you know, no one said the emperor had no clothes with Bud Selig when it was going on with steroids and tie games and all-stars, you know, and it took a while to recover from that. It seems like someone, whether it's a Stephen Ross or another owner, has to sort of sit down with Roger Goodell and say, hey, there is something going on here. That said, it's still making money hand over fist. It's still a clear number one sport. It still is unique in its attraction, but it just shows you that times change, things are cyclical, and there are issues in play.
And let me shift focus here to some of the great things in the community that the owners and organizations here locally in sports have done when it comes to Stephen Ross donating $1 million for Hurricane Irma relief, and the Dolphins and the Buccaneers getting together, and the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Florida Panthers donating $2.7 million. And I came to find out last hour that Mickey Arison, Carnival, the Miami Heat putting together, I believe, $10 million. It really is nice to see the stewards in our community.
That's what you do. When you profit from the community, you put the money back in the community. And the Heat, you know, right now, there's nothing you could say but good things. Mickey Arison said right away, $2.5 million donation, boom, in the pot right away from he and his wife's foundation. And he says that the Heat and Carnival are working toward raising $5 million, and he will match half that total in full, so his $2.5 million would go up to $5 million for $10 million. A really neat backstory also. The Heat and the Golden State Warriors, through the Warriors' connection with FedEx, they're shipping out a plane here to bring rescue animals that were in shelters here in South Florida before Irma out to Oakland, a no-kill shelter to be adopted so they can open more space in the shelters for so many of the dogs and cats and pets that were displaced by Irma. Tomorrow, Eric Spoelstra, Udonis Haslam, other people from the Heat will be at Miami International Airport helping load those animals. And then when they get to the Oakland, California area, there'll be members of the Golden State Warriors and their players taking the pets off the plane. Again, the kind of gesture that also raises heightenedness about pets ahead adoptions, that right now if your life is upside down and you need something to cling to, there are pets who desperately need to be adopted and displaced, and I think that's what the Heat's effort is doing there also. So again, you know, I know you've been talking about it, and people at QAM and the CBS family have been talking about, there can be good things that come out of this, and through stories we're seeing now, through stories at the Sun Sentinel, sunsentinel.com, we're seeing that people are showing the real good side, including that $10 million donation from the Heat, Mickey Arison, and Carnival Corporation.
We are joined here by Ira Winderman, covers the Miami Heat and the NBA for the South Florida Sun Sentinel. So, Ira, the big Heat news last night, Josh Richardson and the Heat agreeing to a four-year, $42 million extension. Why now for Richardson, and what message are the Heat sending with this deal?
It's really interesting, and I've been really sort of, you know, parsing through this all day and last night after they did it. Basically, where the Heat stand on the cap and where Josh's salary was, this is the most they could offer unless Josh becomes a restricted free agent next summer. And people have been going to me, man, the Heat are throwing out money hand over fist. But I try to make a point and ask Ira today at sunsentinel.com of this. The 4 years at $42 million, plus the 1 year that Josh still has left at 1.5, leave him with a five-year average of 8.7. That is exactly the NBA's mid-level exception. Matter of fact, the NBA average salary next year, when it goes to $108 million divided by 15 players in a roster, will be around $7 million. So I'm going to ask you this question. Is Josh Richardson at least an average NBA player?
Yes, no question.
I think he is. So I think for this, to say the Heat are overpaying, forget all the previous deals, this makes sense for them. In fact, I might go the other way, and I might say that Josh Richardson, I believe, has left money on the table. I know there's not a lot of cap space next summer, but you've seen some of these deals, Alex.
Oh, yeah.
And the bottom line is, if Tyler Johnson is getting himself $50 million and Alan Crabb is getting himself more money, there's a very good chance, and it would have been a risk in case of injury, of which he's had several, for Josh Richardson instead to have gone into free agency next summer. But he took the money in hand. What it makes me wonder is this. If you've made the commitment to Goran Dragic, who has at least 2 years left on his deal, to Deion Waiters, who now has a new five-year deal, you have Rodney Magruder at reasonable money, you made a $6.2, $3 million commitment to Wayne Ellington. The Tyler Johnson thing, I almost wonder if they might not have been more aggressive to deal him this offseason if they knew for sure they were going to have four more years of Josh Richardson. That contract, as you know, goes up to over $19 million starting a year from now, 2018, 2019, and can be somewhat of an albatross, not because of the 4 years of $50 million, but the way it wound up being structured as a restricted free agent. So I do wonder if this contract makes the Heat more comfortable maybe to move in other directions in its backcourt, or, as has been speculated, is Josh Richardson potentially the Heat small forward of the future?
Right. It's something that we spoke about a couple of weeks ago. Do you expect, and I know the Heat have media day coming up September 25th and training camp around the corner, do you think Richardson could end up being the guy to start at that three?
Yeah, as I've written and asked Ira several times this offseason and spoke to someone with the Heat, they said don't rule out that possibility. Remember, the Heat thrived last season over the second half of the season with Rodney Magruder at small forward, a defensive component who also had a three-point stroke to stretch the defense. I know people are saying, wait a minute, they drafted Justice Winslow at number 10 in 2015. You can't blow a lottery pick. Look, Justice Winslow might become the kind of player who's better off as a sixth man. That if James Johnson, with his versatility, is going to start, then maybe when he comes out, you bring in a Justice Winslow with his versatility to give a different look, with his passing and his rebounding and his ability to get to the basket and slashing, and maybe use that instead. So again, don't say just because Josh Richardson was a second-round pick in 2015 and Justice Winslow was a first-round pick, that one necessarily has to start over the other. I think Eric Spoelstra is looking more toward the overall rotation. You can have several players within a year or two in this Heat roster where you will have players making less who are starters than guys coming off the bench. For example, Josh Richardson starting ahead of Justice Winslow. Deion Waiters will wind up making less for a couple of years than Tyler Johnson will. You want your best possible cohesion when you're playing ensemble style. So I don't think you'll necessarily see your best five players start from the Heat. I think Eric Spoelstra is more concerned with chemistry throughout the rotation.
And Ira, Goran Dragic's Slovenian basketball team are the little engine that could. They refuse to lose in this EuroBasket.
It was awesome.
Fantastic. And I know you've been all over it on these Slovenian internet streams, but what does this mean for Dragic in training camp? Will he have to miss some time early on?
You know, I think Eric Spoelstra is a smart guy, and he understands if someone has competed at the top of his sport for 2.5 weeks, the last thing you do is make him run suicide drills during 2 days during practices. There's a reason I believe they signed Larry Drew II to bring him in. A point guard has been in a couple of Heat camps before, knows the system, can take reps at point guard. You have someone like Derek Walton Jr. from Michigan on a two-way contract. He can take reps. If I was the Heat, I might even tell Goran he doesn't have to report for the first day of camp. I might give him off some additional time. But Alex, what it showed for me today, and again, people, if you have a chance when you stop driving and you get home, and you can look at some of the photos from today's EuroBasket, Slovenia beating Spain. There was one photo, and I ran it on our website, of Goran Dragic flexing. Oh, my God. I mean, the intensity of that guy and how buff he looks right now. What this is telling me is this. Had the Heat gone to the playoffs last season, Goran Dragic is someone who appreciates the moment and steps up to the moment. He got another one of those three-pointers, fouled, made the free throw today. He hit some late shots. Again, this Spain team, I know people are going, oh, Ira, it's just European basketball.
Spain has been a powerhouse for many years.
They had six NBA players out there. They had Pau Gasol. They had Marc Gasol. They had Ricky Rubio. They had, you know, Gasol squared out there. They had, you know, they had all kinds of players with Juan Carlos Navarro with NBA experience. And Slovenia, the only active NBA player in their roster right now is Goran Dragic. Anthony Randolph, a former journeyman NBA player who has European citizenship, is on that roster also. Echidna, Luka Doncic, a guard there, is likely going to be among the top three, if not the number one picks in next year's draft. 18-year-old, he's been a prodigy. But to watch the passion that Goran Dragic is playing with right now tells you that don't ever deny his possibilities when the stakes are highest. They will play on Sunday in the championship game, the winner of Serbia against Russia. Both of those teams have NBA-level players. 2:30, it'll be on ESPN3. Watch ESPN app. You can watch some before you watch your Dolphins. Turn the sound down. Watch the game. Listen to QAM's Dolphins pregame show. I think I got you covered there.
Beautiful.
I have to take care of all that, and I think you'll just see something special, and then I agree with you, Alex, then give him some time off. His training camp came in September and came with the Slovenia national team, and I just can't tell you how impressive he was today.
And Ira, I know you had to watch a lot of those early round games on, like, Slovenian internet streams. Are you now fluent in Slovenian?
You know, I didn't think I spoke Slovenian, but apparently when you clear your throat, you're saying some Slovenian words, which I never knew. It's that C-H, that hard, the huh sound. So I think I am. And it's weird because I'm getting all these Twitter followers now from Slovenia who are telling me that right now in Slovenia, it's a national party. And that's
just
getting to the championship game. This is the first time Slovenia has ever been in EuroBasket championship game. They are starting the party right now. So they are enjoying the moment. And they're doing it without Beno Udre, who's not even on the team.
So for anybody of Slovenian descent, you want to follow Ira on Twitter at Ira Heat Beat. Check out his work in the South Florida Sun Sentinel. And, of course, contribute your questions to Ask Ira. And Ira, of course, he's a man about this radio station. He was on with Zach Krantz co-hosting Joe Rose yesterday. You hear Ira all the time around town. Ira, thank you so much.
I'd love to stay longer, but I have a hit right now on Slovenian sports radio. Thanks,
how great would that be? Oh, man. Hey, yo, I'm a huge fan of Slovenian sports. They got Goran Dragic, and my goalkeeper from Inter Milan, Samir Handanovic, is Slovenian. He's fantastic, although he got very disrespected on the FIFA skill rant. I'm going to have to rant on this. In the 7 o'clock hour when we have our soccer segment talking football, You could see the look on my face, Solana, when I was I discovered about, I don't know, hour and a half ago, the FIFA, the new game, the FIFA 18 comes out September 29th. They have released the player rankings. I'm looking at the top 100 and I am fuming as I'm looking for my favorite Inter Milan players. Like I ripped it up into pieces. Like I had to print out a second copy. I was so angry. But coming up next, we have clickbait. Nick Saban He's an ass clown. We'll get to that and more next.
We know you spend a lot of time online. Well, so do we. Here's tonight's edition of Clickbait on the Alex Dono Show.
As the powerhouse Alabama Crimson Tide prepare for a marquee matchup against Colorado State, yeah, it should be a slobber knocker. Alabama, by the way, favored by 28.5 points. Okay, so this happens at least once a week in a Nick Saban presser, right? At least once a week, you'll have a reporter ask an honest question, right? You know what? Let me give some credit to the media in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. They do a pretty damn good job there, right? They ask reasonable questions. You know, because sometimes, like you, sometimes we criticize beat reporters from, you know, college towns for just being outright fans of that team and for asking BS questions and for, you know, just drinking the Kool-Aid. It seems like the media covering Alabama do a pretty damn good job. A reporter today asked Nick Saban a fair question, right? Asked Nick Saban. So you had mentioned using two quarterbacks. Is that going to be the plan for Colorado State? Like, it's a reasonable question to ask. And here's the thing. I've covered a lot of news conferences for coaches, whether it's Mark Richt, Al Golden before him, Adam Gase the last couple of years. I've been in virtually every Adam Gase presser. And, okay, every now and then you're going to ask a coach a question he either doesn't like or does not want to or cannot answer. It happens all the time. And every time that happens to Adam Gase, he is courteous about it. If Adam Gase is asked a question he cannot answer, he will tell you, I'm not going to answer that. But he's also not going to humiliate you the way Nick Saban did to this reporter. Listen to this today.
I know you said Saturday after the game that the plan was to play Tua at some point in the first half. Is that still the same plan this week, or how do you plan to manage that?
We haven't decided how we're going to play the guys. So, and I wouldn't tell you if I did. Okay. So, you know, I don't mind you asking a question, but
do you?
I don't need to answer it. But I will call Colorado State and tell them exactly what we want to do as soon as I get out of here. I know Mike Bobo, you know, his dad lives up by my house at Lake Raven, so I just call him up and tell him who we're playing, when, how long, when we're putting them in. Tell him the whole thing. All right? Is that all right with you? So you can call him and find out. All right, see y'all later.
Like, why is that even necessary? And you could tell, like, that reporter was urinating himself by that point when he said, is that okay with you? Yeah, coach, it's fine. He wants to terrorize those reporters there. Like, that is obviously his mission. He's been there, what, 11 years now in Tuscaloosa? And it still, I guess, hasn't completely worked because he's still getting some questions he doesn't want to answer. But it's very clear that Nick Saban's mission statement, and this is why he got the hell out of the NFL with his tail between his legs, because he did not want to deal with NFL reporters. He didn't want to deal with NFL media. He didn't want to deal with that. He wants to control the narrative. And so his mission in Tuscaloosa is, if I can be enough of an a-hole and I can scare these people enough, they will stop asking me questions that have anything to do with strategy or anything that has anything to do with things that don't pertain to football. If I can completely control the narrative, great. I'm glad it's not completely working, that he still gets asked questions he doesn't like. But it's clear his mission there is to scare and to terrorize and to make those reporters tremble in his sight because he is the god, Nick Saban. God forbid you ask him a question about strategy. It's so ridiculous. Like, I've encountered this so many different times. Head coach gets asked a question they don't like. If you don't want to answer it, fine. Like, last Tuesday, when, you know, the rumors were that, oh, they're going to move or postpone or reschedule the Dolphins-Buccaneers game, Adam Gase was asked 19 questions about it. Couldn't answer it because he didn't know. Instead of being an ass clown about it and humiliating reporters, he answered every question as best he could. He lived with it because that's part of the job of a head coach. Apparently Nick Saban can't understand that.
I don't mind you asking a question, but I don't need to answer it.
he could have left it at that. Like, that's all he had to say. That right there, that is all he had to say. Instead, he had, oh, well, I'm friends with Mike Bobo's family. I'm just going to reveal everything to them, and you can ask him if that's okay with you. It's ridiculous. You know, I want to follow up on something because I'd mentioned in the first segment that Los Angeles doesn't want the Chargers. Like, they have the Chargers now. They never wanted the Chargers. The people of Los Angeles, the football fans in Los Angeles, do not care to support the Chargers. The people in San Diego just a couple of hours away, do not care to keep supporting the Chargers because they hate Los Angeles and they hate the fact that this Dean Spanos moved their team to L.A. And even the mayor of Los Angeles, I stumbled upon this story, Eric Garcetti. And just on a side note, if you've been to Los Angeles, like if you've been to LAX, the airport there, within the last couple of years, I've been there a couple times. If you've flown through there, if you've spent any time in L.A., you're sitting in the terminal. They have this recording that plays every 2 minutes. Hi, this is Mayor Eric Garcetti. I want to thank all of the troops for supporting LAX, or LAX, we support the troops. This whole thing, every 30 seconds. Hi, this is Mayor Eric Garcetti. So I'm very familiar with the man. But the Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti, here's a key quote from an interview he did today on the Dan Patrick Show. My heart goes out to the folks in San Diego. We always said in LA, the NFL needs us more than we needed them. And we weren't going to be one of those cities to subsidize stadiums. That was a 20-year standoff. But ultimately, I think people came to their senses and realized we love football. But we also were going to wait and do it on our own terms because we got important priorities for our public tax dollars. I said at the time, both the Raiders and the Chargers could have stayed put where they are because Oakland and San Diego are huge fan bases. There's a big tradition. I believe in players playing for a long time on teams and teams staying in a city for their lives. That's really what makes it great growing up. You can root for the players and the teams without wondering if it's all going to be about business, because clearly for the NFL, it's about business, and where somebody could make a few $100 million more. We embrace any team that comes. We're certainly happy to have the Chargers in L.A., but I think we could have been happy with just the Rams, too. So read between the lines there. Mayor Eric Garcetti in Los Angeles is basically saying, yeah, the Chargers could have stayed in San Diego. We didn't need you guys here. We didn't want you guys. We'll embrace you now that we're here, but this isn't something we wanted. This is the NFL that did it. This is the NFL with the money grab. And that shouldn't surprise you. It's the same National Football League that shamefully has refused Stephen Ross's humble request to give us our home game back, the London game. Hey, we've been through a lot here, Mr. Goodell. You know, it's been a tough go here. We prepared for a catastrophic hurricane. Thankfully, it was not as catastrophic as what we thought might get here, but still, a lot of homes have been damaged, a lot of people displaced, families have been in turmoil for the last week. You know, we now don't have a home game until October 8th at Hard Rock Stadium. We have to play for 16 straight weeks. Can you please, sir, can you be humble enough and kind enough to allow us to have our home game back? The one that we have sacrificed this home game to London, to the fish and chips eaters in London. We have sacrificed this home game. Can we please have this back, sir? That is my humble request. The answer he got, no. The money's too important. I guess that exchange rate from the U.S. dollar to the British pound, it must be fantastic right now because you need all the money from those pale people over there in London. Got to make sure you stash those fat stacks of cash together instead of doing the right thing and giving the Dolphins their home game back. 7 o'clock hour coming up. We'll have Christy Chirinos is going to join us at 7:25. A couple people asking, why aren't you talking Canes? We will talk Canes, I promise. We'll talk some Miami Hurricanes here in the 7 o'clock hour on WQAM.
I don't mind you asking a question, but I don't need to answer it.
This podcast was presented by David Lowe and Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.